This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And I am here in Tantalk Radio Network studio, and I am so happy I have a wonderful guest here with me. Brian James was here a couple of years ago, and I wanted to have him back because I've been talking to all of you about writing a book, and Brian sort of exemplifies what I've been talking about. Here's somebody who started writing. He had a I read his first book, and I thought, whoa, I really like this, and then I followed him up through the years, and now I'm so happy to have him back so he can share his enthusiasm for writing and tell us about his books and just what he's learned from this experience. Hi, Brian.
Hello. Glad to be here.
Okay. Well, let's start. You know, Valentine's Day is a very special day in many ways. And I want to say happy Valentine's to all of my listeners who have been sending me lovely e-cards. I really appreciate them, and they're all so clever. So I want to thank all of you for doing that. And then, you know, it's all often people will say at the beginning of the year, well, I'm going to write a book. I'm going to write my book finally. And they don't start because, you know, January is January and you are sort of caught up with everything. But here on Valentine's Day, it's a good day to say, what am I going to have for next Valentine's Day? How about if I write a book, whether it's a book about my family, a memoir, an autobiography, or a book about some subject that you just love. Maybe a baseball figure that's somebody you followed. Maybe it's something that you have to do research on. Anything to keep you busy and to share the memories and the joys of your life. And next Valentine's Day, boy oh boy, you have a really personal gift to give, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You don't have to worry now about giving people a gift. You just give them one of your books.
Well, I think, pick up on your point, I think the retirement gift that my family gave to me was their help and cooperation, and I think just encouragement about writing itself.
And I think I like what you mentioned before the program started about how it really can become a family project, something that you can do, like in your case. Tell us how you write your books.
Well, it's probably interesting to some people, but it certainly shows that you can overcome obstacles. My typing skills are minimal at best, and so my typist is my wife of 50 years, and she's also my editor. So what I do essentially on my books, and you know, they're quick reads, and because the process takes time, but it shows you that it can be done, is I'll dictate to her, and as I dictate, we do the editing right then and there. So I haven't become cemented into a style or a phrase that later on I see crossed out with red lines from an editor at some publishing service. So pretty much it's as I'm dictating, she's editing, and we go from there. And it's proven, I think, to produce a book that's very professional looking. I think sometimes you can make the mistake if you don't bring in somebody who has those type of skills that you may not have, that it looks a little shabby and it can be seen right away as someone reads the book. But I think after teaching school for 36 years in Cambridge, Mass., she's pretty good.
Absolutely. She's excellent. So she's not only your wife and your typist, she's also your Valentine.
Yeah. Then we also need one other thing. We need a publicist. Uh-huh. And you've talked to my publicist, my 44-year-old son, Jay, who is a graduate of Emerson College in Boston and is a pretty good writer himself. My wife says he's better than me, but he hasn't had the time with two kids to engage in any writing other than for work. And he has helped me immeasurably, you know, with getting contacts with newspaper editors and radio personnel, and just in general encourage me at the different book signings and fairs that I go to on the Cape.
Yeah, let's mention that you are what everybody, all the businesses and the mayor of Clearwater love, and I'm hoping to have the mayor of Clearwater here on the program. He was here before for my first anniversary, so my fourth anniversary of the program is coming up, and I hope to have him here for that to celebrate. But you are a snowbird.
Yeah, well, we've come down here for about 13 winters now. First winter, we were in Newport Richey, and we kept coming to this Palm Harbor, Dunedin, Clearwater area every day, and we said, well, why don't we look at a property? So we did. We bought a little condo in Dunedin, and we love it. We love the town. We love the area. And I don't miss the snow in Boston.
No, especially this year. They've had one snowstorm after the other.
Well, and it's just miserable. I mean, they forget what the sun looks like after Thanksgiving up there.
Yeah, that's too much. I couldn't. I'm a Youper from northern Michigan. So I actually was born on March 28th in a blizzard. Yeah. It was such a terrible blizzard that the doctor had to spend the night. He came in on snowshoes. He could not get to the house in the car. He had to park the car just on the edge of town where the snowplow finished. That was it. And he had to come in on snowshoes and then spent the night. So, but I couldn't do it anymore. So, we all appreciate Florida, even though we had a few cold days and we're like complaining about 52 degrees.
Yeah. Well, no doubt about it. Once you're through with your working career, and you don't have to be there for the winter.
And you don't want to drive. Yeah, so it's great. Now, so your first book was, it just sort of came to you, the idea came to you. Explain about Headstone.
Well, in addition to having a couple of good people around you, I would also recommend that you engage yourself or enroll yourself in a writing program. Not big money. Most libraries have a group that gets together once a month, twice a month, and I happen to be fortunate to find a group in Safety Harbor and had a couple of real good instructors there, and they encouraged me to just develop some notes that I had brought to class for just reading assignments, and from there it went to possibility for a book, and the first book was Headstone, and it was a memoir of my dad, who was born just before the Depression, 1915, and came into the workforce in the middle of it, and he did what he had to do, which in Boston meant that your friends were either policemen or hoodlums, and he knew them all, and he would tell me stories. We lived a little north of Boston, and it was just, it was part of the fabric of the community, and you got some good stories out of it. And, let's face it, it's a genre that is very popular today.
Oh, yes.
No matter what age, what decade you go back to, they were gangsters.
Oh, yes. And definitely in the Boston area, they were very active there. Now, so you had the idea, you knew these family stories that your father had passed on to you, and and so you started just putting them down, and then at one point you said, I can put this together as a book.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's, as a memoir, it's a slice of my life with my dad. And, he's been gone for almost 35 years now. So it initially was a little difficult to bring back everything, because all the people I could have gone to for information, like his friends, my uncles and so forth, they were gone too, So I the other thing I would caution anyone, if you are thinking of doing it, don't put it off, because the sources that you're going to have for information aren't always going to be there.
Well, one of the books that I really love is a book called Maria's Journey, and it was written by Trish and Ray Arredondo. And it is a memoir about Ray's mother, and she came here to America during the Depression, and all of the things that happened, and all of the struggle she went through. when they decided to write the book together, again, a husband and wife coming together, they retired and they wanted to do something special, and they decided to do this, and they had to go back, and of course, again, so many memories are gone because people have passed on, but they did manage to find quite a few people and do interviews and then do a lot of research, and it's what you have to do when you're thinking about what you want to give your family as a gift. The gift of the memories of your relatives, of all of the things that happened in your life, are so precious, and it's so sad when they're lost.
Right.
So you did a great job. Now, explain, what was the reaction when you did Headstone? What did some of the people think about it?
Well, I found that you get your best ideas from the people who read your previous works. People came up to me after Headstone and said, gee, you mentioned a bank vault burglary in the closing parts of your book. What happened? And I said, well, what do you mean, what happened? And they said, well, you know, what happened to the swag, if you will, that was taken out of the safe deposit boxes? And, you know, what happened to law enforcement? Did they catch the crooks or whatever? And I said, well, you got to realize, I said, that was just a story that was locally passed around. My father embellished it a little bit to me. Because even in fiction, you come off real events. You don't know the actual details of them, but you touch on them for your ideas. But people said, you know, you left us hanging. I said, well, what do I have to do, write another book? And they said, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good idea. So that's what I thought.
I wrote Fortune, in the aftermath of an infamous bank vault burglary, and that was book two in the trilogy.
Wow. This is what I'm always telling all of my listeners. It's so much fun. It really is a joy to start writing, and you don't know where it's going to take you. You might be, you know, doing research and you find a footnote. Jackie Minetti, who's been on the program a number of times, she just saw a little footnote about a boy who was involved in the Revolutionary War, and nobody really wrote anything about it. A little footnote, some little kid died, and then everybody up there, you know, got all upset about it. But no story about the boy. And so she started from that footnote. She did like months and months of research and discovered that this boy was really so important to the revolution. He was really the catalyst that people got so angry because he was killed. And there was such an amazing outpouring for this child who died, and thousands of people attended his funeral. So she took from that little footnote, she just had months and months of fun doing research and wrote a book called One Little Spark. And that's why I when people say, well, I don't know what I can write about, I know, there's always a footnote. A footnote can send you on a journey. Isn't it wonderful?
That's right. Yeah. Well, case in point, I mean, after I did the three books, my son, as you can imagine, kept pestering me for something else. And I said, well, we've all played the, you know, the crimes, you know, humor thing, I think, a bit. What should I do? And he said, well, how about all the stories you tell me about college? You know, now that I'm in my 40s, you know, you can tell me, or you have been telling me more about your life when you told me not to do whatever you did. And I said, okay, you know, I said, so I sat down and I wrote this book called Generals, which is, you know, a slice of my life at age 19. And it's entirely age 19. I was, you know, in college. I went to a very small college that was developing a Division III college football program. And I had two choices, either stay in college or go to Vietnam. So I said, well, I think the safer thing might be to play college football. So I played college football for a year, and I played baseball at the school. And it's just, you know, a book on that facet of my life where I also met my wife that year.
Huh. And so you come out, it's not a big book. It's, you don't have to write, sometimes people say, oh, well, a book has to be 350 pages. It doesn't have to be 350 pages. A small book can be just as delightful. And I think this book is, what, about 64 pages. But it has a lot of just fun stories. Again, things that you don't want forgotten.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think I'm an okay writer. I'm really not a great reader, okay? My wife reads volumes of books, and, you know, she knows all the current authors and everything. She also says they're better than me. But the point being that my books tend to be very short chapters, because when I'm reading, I kind of glance ahead for how many more pages in the next chapter. And if I'm a little tired, the book's getting closed. So I found that shorter chapters tend to keep people reading, you know?
Yeah, and that is true. And this is the kind of book that people will pick up. They might read it outside on the pool, on the patio, just for, because it is so important that you keep reading. As you age, it's really important. There is no question. The research has proven that people who read, their brain cells work better. They keep there's all those little neurons in the brain. And if you watch like one television show over and over and over and over, it's the same neurons hitting the same spots in the brain. But when you have something new, it sort of opens up all these other brain cells. And this is absolutely true. And my son had a violin teacher, and I didn't understand. Now, you know, I read. I read over now. I've read more than 10,000 books. Wow. But, and I always knew, you know, that I know a lot of stuff. And then this violin teacher, his name was Dr. Hockman, and he said to me, and he was very smart, and I said to him, well, why do you, and he could quote things, he could remember things. I said, well, why do you remember all these things? And he said, I discovered that if I have dates, it puts it in sort of like a, almost like a filing cabinet in his brain. And if he knew the date of something, he could go back somewhere in that filing cabinet and find something about that subject. So it's this kind of thing of using your brain cells for something fun, like writing. It's just, it's lovely. Now, when to this book where you're talking about when you were 19, did you send it to some of the people you knew?
I sent it to a couple of guys that I played with, and they liked it a lot. They were amazed that I had the information saved, because if you didn't save it at the time, it didn't get saved for posterity in a Division III program. As you can see, our record in the back was none too favorable. And that's
what the heck?
That's it's part fun. Of it, too. You know, we were just starting, and the program, it turned out to be a very good college football program at the Division III level, which is non-scholarship. And I write on that. I'm a little sensitive to the fact that the scholarship athletes get all the attention, and the non-scholarship athletes really make the school, because they're involved in other activities, and they play other sports and so forth. They're not housed together necessarily. So they're much more integrated within the general college community. So that's a bias I have that will come out to the reader in that book.
Well, I think what you're doing is wonderful, and you were mentioning something that even, you know, just to find something to write, if you're just beginning and you say, what can I write? You're writing a newspaper. You actually created a little newspaper.
Yeah, I have one of my best characters here today with me, a gentleman I call BB. And I write about his antics and mine and some of the other people in the complex that we're in, sort of humorous social commentary and just different things that we engage in. And everyone gets a big kick out of it.
Well, I think it's a lovely idea, because, again, when you share and keep these stories alive, and it's something to, I'm sure, even with your writing about your condo complex, that there are interesting little stories that people tell you, and that, you know, and who knows, one of them might lead to an idea for a novel. So next thing you know.
Well, Bob and my son Jay have entitled it Snowbird. And, you know, the Psalms of Victoria Palms.
Okay, well, so. I think it's a brilliant idea. So where can people get your books? You don't have a website. You have a...
Well, they're e-books.
They're e-books, yeah.
They're e-books from Barnes & Noble, Amazon. And basically, I do most of my selling back home in the Cape, because most of the books are about things that happened there. Chase, the third book in the trilogy, does have quite a bit about Florida, because I have to come down here, because when you write a book that says most of the mobsters that you write about couldn't find their couch in the living room, and that the Bureau has some detriments too to its work, they could get together and come after you, you know, and that's the premise for Chase.
Yeah.
What would happen if the almighty Bureau and the mobsters ever got together to get Brian James to stop writing his foolish books?
Well, I think that's fun. And I was going to say, one of the things that I love, where's that? I had, oh, Chase, yeah, right there. I love this book. I like the cover on this one. It's really great.
Yeah. That was done by a printer right here in Dunedin.
Yeah.
A gal that worked with us, her name was Jenny, and she did a great job.
Well, Chase is the subtitle is The Humorous Side of Paranoia.
Well, it's a mouthful. I'll grant you that. But, you know, and it's fun. I mean, obviously, you know, the mobsters and the Bureau didn't break down my condo door to ask me questions. But
well, you never know now.
It's
nowadays.
It's great in a book where you lay it out as fiction.
Yeah.
And the last two books are totally fiction. Like I mentioned to you before, Headstone was pretty much 85% true and 15% Irish.
Well, I am just so happy that you came in today, Brian, because I you really show everyone that you have this. There's something within us that we are storytellers, and some people I sort of give up partly, and I hate to say this, but so often in school they just don't let you write the way you need to write when you first start writing. You have to write what you feel. Mm-hmm. And don't worry about the grammar. Don't worry about the punctuation.
Absolutely.
Get the ideas down. And some of you out there have interesting lives or interesting families. Even if you're not ready to write this year, save them. Save this stuff, and you know, put a box and say, when I retire or when I, you know, go skiing and break a leg and I have 3 months that I have to sit around doing something, I have this material. And also stay in touch with your family, because you can get a lot of stories from them. And I would like to recommend people, if you're just going to do something like that, you might look at getting a writing program called Scrivener. It's a program that where your writing is organized into chapters already. So you can ask your family to actually submit stories so that you can put them in the book. It's quite a wonderful program. And I'm going to do a little seminar on it somewhere. I'm trying to find a library where they'll let me do a seminar, because it just would make your life easier. But anyway, again, thank you so much for coming in today. Happy Valentine's to you. Happy Valentine's to your wife. She's a real sweetheart for and I'm sure she loves working with you.
Yes, it's been a really great experience. I'd encourage anyone to give it a shot.
Absolutely. Okay, thank you. And I have to say happy Valentine's to Jay, because I'll send this recording to you later so you can share it with him, because he is your biggest fan. He's amazing.
Yeah. Like I say, every time I try to semi-retire, he pulls me back in.
Well, he's doing a great job, so you're very, very lucky.
Thank
and it
you.
Was absolute pleasure to have you today. Okay, we're going to have a commercial break, and then I'll be back with my next guest from Hawaii. She's in Hawaii. This is exciting. That's my first Hawaii. Okay.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers' clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and I am just waiting for a call in from Hawaii. That will be my first call from Hawaii. That's exciting. What time is it over there? It's early, but she's up and ready to talk about her book, I'm sure, because she's a wonderful author, and her name is Catherine Lloyd, so she should be calling in another few minutes. But meanwhile, I want to say happy Valentine's Day to my husband, who is my sweetheart, and to my son, Daniel, who's up there in the freezing weather of Madison, Wisconsin. Whew, I don't envy him, but I do miss him, and it was so wonderful that he was down here a few weeks ago. And also to my sister, Natalie, who we call around here the connoisseur of cozy mysteries, and just thank her so much for everything she does for me. She reads a lot of the mysteries that I review, and she also is just a lot of fun. So I want to say happy Valentine's to her. And I can't forget Radio Rita, Rita Moreau, who does our book buzzes. She is always so wonderful, and I love when she does a book buzz. And she's going to be in here in another week or so to do some more. So I want to say very, very happy Valentine's Day to her. And also remember, it's just so important and for me just to thank all of you for just being so good to me and following me along. And as I said, the fourth anniversary is coming up, and I really appreciate everything that you do for me. Okay, now, what else? Our legal eagle, Joy on Paper, has a legal eagle who comes in and talks about intellectual property. And right now, I'm just collecting all the emails that you're sending me. Send me an email at patsy.radio@gmail.com or go to my webpage, radio-joyonpaper. And I have there a form you can fill in and ask Bill Larson of Larson & Larson your intellectual property question. And I hope that you will do that, because I know Bill always loves to see your emails and the questions that come up, because there are so many things that you have to know about when you are an author. Not only do you have to know about publicity and about the whole writing process, but you have to know your intellectual property rights. So make sure that you just let me know if you have a question. I'm trying to think of other things. There's so many things that I've got on my head, because it's wonderful to talk to some of you who have been emailing me, particularly about the Writer's Digest published author books. So if you've already published your book and you have it ready to go to a competition, I suggest you do Writer's Digest competition, which is coming up. Deadline is April 1st. And I'm sure that you will find it interesting, because if nothing else, even if you don't win, they give you a wonderful, wonderful analysis of your book. And so now I am so happy to talk to Catherine Lloyd. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, well, okay. You didn't lose your British accent, did you?
No, 20 years in America, and I'm still hanging on to it.
Okay, well, I am so happy to talk to you. And you're in Hawaii, right?
That's right.
Okay.
Nice and early to...
Wonderful. You're my first call from Hawaii, so I'm so... you're British, but you're in Hawaii. And I am just so thrilled to talk to you because, you know, I am someone who... I love to talk to British people. It brings me back to the years that I lived in England, and I had so much fun there. And so I was really excited when I got Death Comes to Bath. Now, I hope I'm saying it the proper way. Well, you know, and I think now, I don't know if people in Bath have given up and are saying Bath because Americans say Bath. What do you think?
No, they still say Bath.
Yes, I know. I lived in Sonning, which is in, you know, just near Henley. And so,
all right.
Yes, so it was so funny when I first got there. Well, when I first got to England, of course, I mispronounced everything, including Bath. But I'm sure everybody, most Americans probably say Bath, right, to you?
Yes, they do.
Do.
I mean, that's fairly common.
It's like, it's funny, but when I was there, now, I did know when I arrived, I knew Leicester Square because
right.
of, you know, of the song. But other than that, I think I mispronounced everything. Then I went up to Scotland, made the mistake of going up to Scotland, driving through the countryside, and arrived up in Scotland, driving, got lost, kept stopping, talking to all these nice farmers along the road, and kept saying, I'm trying to get to Kirkcudbright. Where's Kirkcudbright? And they'd say, oh, it's a wee bit along there, you know, to the left. And then I'd go around and I'd find another farmer. And he said, oh, a wee bit further to the right. They kept me going in circles. And then finally some young guy on a bicycle, he said, oh, are you looking for Kirkcudbright? I said, yes.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. But it's so nice to talk to you. And so you've been here 20 years. The new book is fun. Well, I love, of course, I love cozy mysteries. I love British mysteries. I love historical mysteries. So you sort of cover all the bases with me.
I try. Yeah, I was very lucky. My editor about 8 years ago, I also write romance novels. And my editor about 8 years ago said to me, would you like to write historical fiction for me? And I said, no, thank you. That's a lot of work. And a lot of research. He said, well, if there's something historical you'd like to write, because he knows I've got I'm a history major. And I said, I'd love to write a mystery because I absolutely love cozy mysteries. And I grew up on Agatha Christie. And I just thought, you know, having that Regency period was my historical period anyway, but to set something in that period, which I knew, and then to add on a whole new genre of mystery, that would work quite well. So I've really enjoyed writing these books.
Well, tell us about your hero and tell... Well, this is the eighth book, right? Is this the eighth or ninth?
That's a good question. I think it's seven. I can't remember. Six or seven.
Okay. So tell us about the idea for it. And I think it's fascinating.
Well, the idea for it was I had been watching Rear Window, and I thought it was very interesting to have a sort of a slight role reversal in that the hero was the one who was stuck in bed, and the heroine was the one who was actually doing most of the sleuthing. And also having a man who was an ex-military, you know, dashing hussar in the Prince Regent's regiment, stuck in bed, you know, very grumpy and miserable, and then having this very, very capable vicar's daughter who was able to, despite her class, go into everybody's houses and be nosy, because that's what, you know, because daughters do. So she had the ability to go into every situation, social situation, from upper class to lower, and, you know, stick her nose in. And I liked that. I liked the fact that she was able to step outside those, confines of her time, and that he was stuck in bed and had to, you know, do what she said, basically. I thought that was a very interesting setup for them.
Well, I think it's wonderful. I love Major Sir Robert Kurland. And tell us a little bit about him.
He is grumpy, as you probably gathered. He's very opinionated. He, you know, he's the lord of his land. He's the magistrate. He's terribly afraid of horses since his accident when he nearly died at Waterloo when his horse came down on top of him. And in that time period, you know, to be a country squire and to be afraid of horses is quite difficult for him, and it's something he tries to hide, and it's something that he feels is quite shameful. And I think it's just for him that going from being a man of action to suffering this terrible injury and, you know, suffering depression, even though those time periods they didn't, you know, classify as that, and feeling, you know, he doesn't know what to do with himself and his life. And this sleuthing business, when Lucy Harrington, his old friend, comes up and badgers him into, you know, becoming alive again and getting involved again, is actually quite crucial to his well-being and to his, you know, his future. But in the first book, obviously, he doesn't realize that. He just thinks she's very annoying. But, you know, this whole sleuthing business sets him back on the path of being well and obviously then finding the person he wants to marry, although that takes a while. I don't know if you've read how many of the books you've read, but it takes a while for them to get together.
Well, that's what makes it fun. They grow on us. Now, tell us why, what brings him to Bath? Because some Americans might not know why Bath is so important.
Well, he had this injury at Waterloo, and his leg was nearly crushed, and his friend, who was the surgeon, saved his leg, and then he still always had problems with it. And then several years later, it gets bad again, and his friend has to open up his leg. And, you know, there's all these, you know what injuries are like. There's bits of bone and cloth and whatever that he ends up being able to take out, and that leaves the leg very weak again. So Lucy, being very managing, organizes for him to go to Bath, which is a famous spa town. It has hot springs, which were discovered by the Romans way back, and they have healing properties. And in the Regency period, a lot of the gentry would go to Bath to take the waters, and that meant they literally bathed in them because it was hot water. I mean, it's boiling hot. I know you've been there.
Oh, yes.
You know what it's like. And then you drunk the waters as well. And they weren't actually bad for you because, they, you know, nowadays we do drink spring water because there's a lot higher concentration of vitamins and minerals and things in there, which actually are helpful, they've discovered now. So that's why they end up there. It's not as fashionable by the time they get there, which is how Lucy manages to get him to go there, because she said he'd go to Brighton, which is where the Prince Regent is, or he can go to Bath, where the Prince Regent isn't. So he, you know, he reluctantly goes along with her and goes to Bath.
Well, I think the books are delightful, and I like that it's set in that period. I'm particularly fond of that period of history. So, and I'm a real Napoleon fanatic. I have like maybe 100 books about Napoleon. I started like reading Napoleon when I was like 10 years old, and I've just carried on for years. And actually, I have some really collector item Napoleon books because I lived in England. Since I lived in it, you know, it was so wonderful to live in England because I bought so many books there, and it was so. Well, I came back. When I came back from England, I came back with a. I brought in a container, you know, a 20-foot container, and it was almost all books. I had at one point like 6,000 books.
Oh wow! You sound like me.
and of course, the ability to find books, it was so great in England. So I couldn't miss it, and I'm so happy that I did because, it's hard in Florida. I don't find that same kind of bookstore around here.
No. I did a lot of study about Napoleon in that time period when I did my degree, and he's a very fascinating character.
It's a wonderful period to write about, and of course I've been to Waterloo many times, so yes. I just love it. It's one of my favorite trips. There's the restaurant there where they make this wonderful trout. It's still like one of the best I ever had in the whole world, and I've traveled all over, and it's right
really?
There. And, yes, it's amazing.
I love trout. I have to try that.
Yes, yes.
We went to France, took my daughter. Oh, when I was researching the book, we actually spent two weeks last summer living in Bath. And I just literally walked all the paths that I wanted to walk.
Oh.
Got a sense of it on foot so that I could, when I had details in the book where I wanted them to walk from A to B, those details would be accurate. Because what's so interesting about Bath is that so much of it is exactly the same as it was when Jane Austen lived there.
I know.
It hasn't changed.
I know. It really is amazing.
Yeah. And, you know, because it's appalling for modern day traffic. If you go there, you know it's getting in and out of that city is awful. But, you know, we stayed right in the center, and that gave me the opportunity to just really get a feel for it, you know, and to walk around and to plot the journeys and to get the times and things like that, which don't necessarily make it into the book, but, you know, give it that structure and that sense of place that I think is really important in a cozy mystery.
And you certainly do. Your research is brilliant. And I actually moved to England because of Jane Austen. I was reading at a very young age, at like the age of three, like Beatrix Potter. You know, she was reading at the age of three, and so when I got into my sort of mid-teens, I became obsessed with Jane Austen, read everything, and I was saving my money all through school and high school and until I was 21. I went to England and I bought a 400-year-old cottage in Sonning, because, you know, it's not too far from where she was born, and of course I roamed that area where she lived a lot. Mm-hmm. But it was fun. It was a 400-year-old cottage, and it was, you know, quite an experience for a 21-year-old American girl to buy it. I paid £19,000.
Wow, that was a good deal back then, right?
Oh, wow, that was
packed.
Well, it was funny, and I had £6,000 left over of money, which I needed because when I bought it, guy I hired to, you know, fix it, because they had put plastic tiles on the ceiling and covered all of the beams. They'd plastered over four fireplaces. I wanted to bring it back to the, you know, original look. And I arrived, and the contractor said, "Would you want the good news or the bad news or the really good?" Anyway, it turned out that I had dry rot, which wasn't too hard to fix, wet rot, which would take a little bit more. And then I had a 40-foot hole in the living room, or the parlor, 40-foot hole. He pulled up one of the boards, and he said, "Look down there." And he flashed, you know, took out the flash and light, and he showed me, and it was 40-foot. And I had just...
Is it a well?
No, it was. It's in Sonning, so it was part of the tunnel system. You know, because of course Reading Cathedral wasn't far away, and going all the way back to Henry VIII, it was one of the places where they hid and went down to the Thames. So much fun.
I love tunnels. I always have tunnels in my books. I can find them.
Yeah, but you don't want to live over one that's collapsed.
Oh.
It was fun.
Oh.
They fixed it. But it was part of living in England. And one of the absolute joys. So that's why when I was reading your books, and I said, you know, I just love the way you've done your research. You really have this ability to take us to this spot. And you know, another of my favorite authors is Tasha Alexander, who writes also.
Yeah.
You know, she
I've read her books.
Yeah, so she also does a very meticulous research, which is what, you know, in a book. It's so funny when sometimes people will write books about places they haven't been or don't know. And I can immediately spot it because, first of all, I've lived so many places. I know these places, and particularly England, where I never got tired of going, you know, someplace in England and just being there. Of course, my favorite spot in England was the reading room at the British Museum.
Oh, it's beautiful there, isn't it?
Well, it's not beautiful anymore. You know that they what they did to it.
Yeah.
Oh, I think. it's horrible. Just horrible. I spent so many hours there. I would read everything I could get my hands on there, and they were so wonderful. And now they just turned it into this thing that you look through a glass at. I mean, ridiculous. Really, those people, whoever did that, they're horrid. They're just horrid. So I just have no sympathy for those people. I think they're just horrible people who did that, because it was such a it was a room that was full of life. You know, it was so quiet.
Yeah.
But it was so full, because everybody's brains were working in that room. I mean, there was a lot of deep thinking there. So I miss that.
I did my dissertation on colonial America, of all things, and I did Welsh history of Pennsylvania, the Quakers who came to Pennsylvania with William Penn. And I got to – the nicest thing about that is I got to see, like, original source material – which was held in the National Library of Wales, and that was things like letters that had been sent back from the original settlers back to their families in Wales. And quite often they would write them half in Welsh so that the captain of the ship couldn't read what they were saying about him, you know, whether he was a good captain or whether he fed them properly or all these things. And it's just amazing to see things from, you know, these are like 1600 these original things and these original diaries and journals. And that's, you know, that's touching history. And I think that's one of the things I like about Bath, is that, you know, you can touch that history. You can literally walk the way Jane Austen walked down there.
I know.
And that's just, you know, you're living and breathing it, and that's just so special. And to try and get that into a book, you know, without overloading people with too much history or giving them a lecture.
Yes, that's the beauty of your books. You just blend it in there, so it's all there, and it just sort of seeps into your brain, and it's delightful. And I want to tell people your website. Tell us your website.
Okay. It's KatherineLloyd.com.
And spelled with a C.
That was a C.
Yes, and very very L. British. In America, not too many people have the C, and I like it. I just had Kathy Ace on not long ago, and you know, she's Welsh, and she's also a cozy mystery writer, and she has a C. So it's Catherine with a C.
That's
Catherine
fine.
Lloyd. Very nice website. You have your books there, and you have it's just a pleasant. I love the colors. I like it very much.
Thank you. I'll tell the person who made it for me.
Well, they did a good job.
That's not my skill set.
They did an excellent job. It's really nice. And I want to thank you so much for being on the program today. And, what can I say? When somebody is just so good at doing history and bringing it into a book and making the fun, and all the characters are really interesting. So I hope that, every time you have a release, just let me know and I'll have you back on the program, okay?
Thank you. I'm just finishing up the next one, actually, and that will be coming out at the end of the year. I only write one a year, so it'll be coming out probably the end of this year.
Okay. Well, we'll have you back, okay?
Thank you. That'd be lovely.
Okay. Bye-bye, Catherine. Bye.
Bye.
Okay. Well, she is nice. I love people who have a British accent. Anyway, again, I want to thank Brian James for coming in today, because it's really important that I love to see this development over the years. As I said, he was on, actually now I realize, 3 years ago. He was like during my first year on the program. And had its first book out, and just to see what he's been doing over this time period. And I'm going to be having some of the authors that I had on the program in the very first few months, and they're going to be coming back for my anniversary month of March. And I just love how they have developed. So many of them have just, I mean, it's blossomed. It's like an amazing thing. Carol J. Perry is an example. She's going to be on February 26th, and we will be talking about her latest mystery, Final Exam. And again, one of the nice things about doing this program is I get to meet all these authors, and so many of them right at the beginning of their careers, and to see them just blossom and grow and get better, because authors do get better. It's wonderful. And if they don't get better, I will say this. Recently, about 6 months ago, I was given a book or sent a book by a very famous author, and I said, this author not only didn't grow, this author just like collapsed. And I refused to review it. I just said, I can't. I mean, I read the book because I wanted to see how bad it was getting. And so when I bring somebody on, it's because I like their books. Otherwise, I get these emails from people every once in a while, like, why do you like this author? Why do you always say you like this author? Because if they're not good, and if I don't like them, they're not on the program. So I just want to tell you that, so that you know why some people are on and some people aren't. And also, if you have an author that you like, I would really enjoy getting your recommendations. And then if I have them on the program, you can call in and say hello. Because in a few weeks, I'm going to be seeing Margaret George, who, of course, is one of my favorite authors. Her book, her most recent book, Splendor in the Dark, about Nero, is just a fantastic read. And so I'm really excited that I'm going to be seeing her in a few weeks for lunch. And that's one of the joys of what I am doing, getting to meet and talk to so many wonderful authors. And also, remember, please, please go to Facebook and like Radio Joy on Paper. And that would really help me. I have been trying to get back into Facebook. The problem with Facebook is if you don't do it for a few weeks, you like, I forget what I'm doing. So now I have to spend this weekend trying to remember how to do everything again. But I will, and I will post things. And again, go and check out Catherine Lloyd's Cozy Mysteries if you're looking for something to read, especially if you're up there in the cold and you need something good. Okay. Bye-bye. And now I'm playing something special.